Welcome to the Owners Collective podcast. I'm your host, Prue Chapman, and I'm here to help you build a better business. Whether you're just starting out or you're looking to grow your global empire, this is the place for you. My mission here is to inspire and educate a new wave of business owners. Business owners that value purpose and planet equally with profit and projections, so that we can truly use business as a force for good. Here, I'll be sharing real-time, real-world strategies that I've learned from mentoring over 15,000 businesses. We'll be covering everything from entrepreneurial mindset and marketing right through to leadership, finances, growing your team, and everything in between. Most importantly, I'll be helping you build the business that's right for you. To get started, download my free guide to starting and scaling your business at theownerscollective.com/start-and-scale. Welcome back, friends. We're here today to talk all about money with Phoebe Blamey. Now, Phoebe is a financial planner, a mortgage broker, and the founder of Clover Financial. Now, across her career, she's provided expert advice to individuals, couples, and businesses to help inspire people to build their wealth and achieve their dreams. Now, Phoebe has a passion for helping women to make good money decisions, so much so that she's just released a book on it, The Happy Money Journey. And I gotta say, it's pretty awesome. Now, the Happy Money Journey is based on friendly and fearless finance advice for women to help them make good money decisions and live life on their terms. And it is packed with super simple and quick money mindset activities to help women better understand their financial position and overcome a list of limiting beliefs around money. Phoebe, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Prue. I'm very grateful to be here.
Oh, I'm thrilled that you're here. And just cheeky for all of our listeners, Phoebe and I do know each other offline, and I'm just one of Phoebe's biggest fans. I love what she does. And the thing I love most is how much heart she comes with to the financial space. I think it's quite a different approach. And just when you're around Phoebe, you can actually, like, you can feel how much she cares about, you know, people buying their first home or getting out of debt. And I mean, there's so many things. So I will jump into the interview because I know that all our listeners are going to feel that for themselves. But I just wanted to like preface that right at the start here, because sometimes I think when we talk about financials, people can have a tendency to go into a little cave or, you know, kind of switch off, but you just bring so much heart to it. So thank you for that, Phoebe. And I thought we'd just kick off with a big open question, which is, you know, why was it important for you to write this book, The Happy Money Journey?
Well, it was actually important to me, Prue, because I'd had my own quite unhappy money journey. I was a single mother. I came from not having very much money after my separation and had to teach myself to manage money on my own instead of as part of a couple. I'd got into some credit card debt. I'd made quite a lot of mistakes in the way that I was handling money. And I'd self-taught, even though I was working in financial services, I self-taught to get myself out of that predicament, but I also watched a lot of my clients. I had so many learnings and I knew so many other women that were in their similar position that I thought this just needs to be put in print. Someone needs to be talking to a group of people who think that money is beyond them and difficult and hard and challenging and overwhelming, and make it something that's easy to control and easy to get your head around, because if you know what you're doing with it, it's easy to get good at it.
That is such a great lead-in to everything that we're talking about today. And really, I guess, hearing your personal story, I love it when people's learnings come from their personal story, because they're lived and breathed experience. So next question up for you, Phoebe, is how can we be more mindful when it comes to money?
I think the most important thing is to look at your language when you're talking about money and what your internal dialogue is. And one of the first things that I recommend that we do in the book is take note of how we're speaking about money, because how we're speaking about money is how we're inviting it into our world. So if we're walking around saying, I'm no good with money, I don't like it, I never have enough money, I can't afford things, then that manifests. Whereas if you go around saying, money's coming to me, I get it, I have simplified my banking, I understand where my money goes, and I'm in control of my money, then that manifests. So That is the mindfulness. That is the first step for me, I think, on the mindfulness of getting your head around what you're actually doing. Is that enough?
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's really important that you say that because it's true, I think, across all areas of our life, in that the way that we speak to things really does manifest. And there's that great saying of, you know, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And I think it's the same with the language. When we say we either can do things or we say that we can't do things, either way we're going to be right. So just bring, and I also think that there's a real lack of attention that we have around how we voice things as well. And, you know, sometimes we can catch ourselves sounding exactly like our parents. You know, I think particularly for a lot of my friends who are parents, they start sounding like their parents. And it's this conscious, bringing conscious attention to the way that we speak about things to bring it to light. So that's a brilliant first step. So what are some more kind of practical and actionable steps that we could take to improve our inner and outer dialogue around money?
One of the things that I recommend that we do is just take note. So have it on your phone, have it on a little notepad, and every time you find yourself talking about money, just write down your language, and that leads to understanding your language. And then on a very practical step is to also know where your money's going. So understand physically where it's going, and that's a reasonably easy thing to do. Most bank accounts now have a situation where you can get online and it will show you exactly where the money's going, as in what you're spending it on. So it'll tell you if you're spending it on entertainment, on drinking places, on eating places, on groceries, and you can physically see through your bank accounts where you're actually spending. And that level of mindfulness is really important to getting in control, because then you can see physically where things are going, and then you can work out why you're saying things like, I can't afford it, or I don't have enough money.
And this is really important, isn't it? Because it's kind of having a good, like, I guess, a helicopter view of what's actually going on before you try and change anything.
It really is. It's like if you're wanting to get fit, or you're on a diet and you write down your what you're eating. It's a really similar thing to just observe and know what's happening, because if you know what's going on, then yes, you almost make immediate changes just from knowing what's going on, just from that helicopter view, and then you can dig deeper and deeper into what you're doing and how you're spending and all of those sort of next step things.
Brilliant. Now, staying on the topic of kind of mindset, I know that something that you talk about that I really love is around creating a mindset of deserving when it comes to money. Could you talk our listeners a little bit through that?
Yes, I think what we do, and I think that this is also can be quite particular to women, is that we look at it and we think we're not worthy of it or not worth it. And It's very much, and I talk about it as far as asking for pay rises and getting paid, or being self-employed and asking for what you're actually worth, rather than discounting yourself. And if you go into, say you're going into a situation where you're going to ask for a pay rise, and I have to say more than 60% of women who ask for a pay rise get one. So your chances are you're going to get it. Because time is on your side. But it's that mindset of thinking, okay, well, I don't want to ask because I'm part-time and I'm really grateful to have this job, and I know what's, you know, the business is suffering and, you know, we've had something else going on. It doesn't matter. What matters is how you look at yourself. That matters, that self-talk really matters. And what you need to do is change your self-talk so that you're saying things along the lines of, if I was working for any other employer, I would be earning XYZ. I have the competencies, I have the skills, and I am an asset to this business. I can go in and ask for what I actually deserve. So that sort of thing. And also, I think when we're self-employed, and I was listening to one of your podcasts the other day, and it was talking about women earning, asking for, when we do our billing, asking for 38% less than men do. And I thought that was a really interesting stat. And I looked it up and I did a little bit of research, and lo and behold, that holds up. That's completely true. And there's no reason for that except for what we think we deserve. So I would be thinking, if you're self-employed, look at your pricing and add 10%, because why not? Add 20%. And why not? And see what sort of results you get. Because people take seriously people that ask for a decent amount of money, because it is often when you're asking for a service or asking for something from someone else, they charge a little bit more. You think you're going to get value for money. You know you're going to get value for money. And you know as a business you're giving a lot of value for money. So there's no reason not to ask for it. If you're proud of what you're doing and you're doing your best work, ask to be paid for it.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, and I'm glad the stats stood up, given that we have put it out here on the podcast.
That's
I'd be
just
in a bit
me.
Of trouble just... if not.
I knew
I know,
it would.
That's your financial background.
It was just me. I just thought, if I'm going to re-quote that, I just need to know. I'm like all over the ABS and looking up things and stuff like that. But a friend of mine told me a story that she'd actually done an online course around PR, and she wanted it to be something that was really accessible. So she'd charged a lower amount than any other course in that space. And she found that she had a lot of tire kickers. She had a lot of people coming in and saying, I want to do your course, but, you know, can I pay by the month? Can I do it this way? Can you discount me further? And all of that sort of stuff. When she then thought, you know what, that's not what I want. I want people that are really going to get value out of it. She doubled her price, got the right people, and the course has worked brilliantly with great feedback and leading into a great community.
And I am a big fan of this thinking, as you well know, Phoebe, mm-hmm. because people value what they pay for. It is so true, and it's time and time again. When people put money on the table, then they value what they pay for and they show up and they do the work, and by doing the work, people get the results, and therefore it feeds into this beautiful positive cycle of feedback, you know, that people invest the money, they invest the time, they get the results, and it just goes circular like that. So I couldn't agree more. And I mean, I think there are just countless stories about women who are undervaluing themselves. And when they make that decision, or whether you call it a decision or a leap of faith, or they just kind of put the blindfolds on and blindly jump at up-leveling their pricing, they get that reflected back to them really quickly. One of my favorite stories around this is a friend of my mother's, actually. She made these beautiful hand-knitted woolen jumpers, and she sold them up at Sanctuary Cove in Queensland. And she was selling them for, I think, about $60. This is quite a while ago, but they were beautiful, hand-knitted, you know, all Australian wool, about $60, and they just wouldn't sell in this particular shop. And then the shop owner ended up saying to her, "Do you mind if I bump up the price?" And so she bumped them from $60 up to $300, and they just sold like hotcakes. And it's just like that kind of evidence. And I say this, you know, really with trust in our listeners, that of course the value has to be there. And in this example, absolutely it was, because these jumpers, they were handcrafted, they were, you know, made in Australia. The value is definitely there. And the same thing with online courses and the like. But when you do value things properly, it just sends out a different energetic frequency to the world that is then valued back towards you.
Absolutely. And there's a little exercise that you can do where you basically look at what someone that's employed in your industry would be earning if they were working in a high-level corporate role doing what you're doing, and then add in your overheads, your tax, your super, and try that as a price point instead of just throwing a dart at a wall and thinking that'll do. I'm only worth $100 an hour. You could be worth $800 an hour.
That's such a great exercise to do. And I bet everyone listening right now is thinking, what would a senior graphic designer be charging, you know, be earning in an agency? Or what would, whether it's a business coach or a business strategist, anything like that, and then add in everything on top. And I dare say that there's probably a few people listening that might need to triple their rates off the back of that. Now, before we move on, I just wanted to touch on this, you know, as we were talking about, you know, the deserving, which is what kind of underpins this, and the self-value and the self-worth. And it's a conversation I was having recently around making the switch from desperate moderate to deserving. And, you know, this conversation was happening in my world because, you know, with my partner being a musician, there's a lot of our friends are musicians, and one of our musicians' friends had said it. He said, we really need to change this mindset that we've got as musicians from being, oh, I'm so grateful for this gig, or I'm grateful for this support, to actually, I'm making incredible music and I'm enhancing society as a whole, and people are really enjoying what I'm putting out there. And so this mindset of deserving, and I think a lot of our abundance in life, you know, it really, it's reflected back to us when we're in that place of self-worth and deserving. They're the people that kind of seem to generate or magnetize all the opportunities around them, are the people that really sit really comfortably within their own self-worth. Is that something you've seen as well, Phoebe?
That is something that I see every day, Prue. That is such a good example of deserving as well around that creative space, because it's hard to pinpoint an outcome from you're a musician to what you're actually bringing. But what you're bringing is your level of skill and creativity. That music can change someone's life, it can change someone's day, and it can change someone's mood. Everything we do has an impact on others, and knowing that you're out there and having that impact is part of your worth. Again, a little exercise, just what do you bring to the table? What are the things that you have that are unique to you, that no one else can do and that no one else has? And it's hard, sometimes hard to monetize that, but it is possible. It is possible to look at what would a session musician be making, or, you know, what is Elton John making, or that sort of thing, to be able to have a bit of a reflection on that. And also just really digging deep into your own opinion of yourself. Sometimes asking not so much friends and family, but asking clients for some feedback about what you've brought to them, and having some really positive feedback come back to you, can be a good way of defining what it is that you do and what it is that you bring as well. And I think those things are really important. I've got two friends that do the same job, and one of them, when she's talking about how she's going to bill them, she knows that she is an expert in her field. She knows that she is probably one of the best at what she does. They're buyer's advocates. She's probably one of the best at what she does in her area. She's very good at finding people the owner-occupied home that they want to live in for the rest of their lives. And when she talks to them about how much she's charging, she tells them how much she's charging. The other one knows that she's good at what she does as well, but will send them a price list, and that's the only conversation she ever has about charging, and then has a lot of trouble getting money from them at the end, because hasn't really put herself into that spot where she's thinking, I work really hard for this. I've got an expertise in this area that no one can match. I'm really good at it. Therefore, when I talk to you about what I'm going to charge, I explain it clearly and concisely and what value you're getting for it. Or you just send a price list kind of with a pile of papers that they sign and don't point it out. She physically has trouble getting paid.
Wow, that's such a great example. And I think that many of our listeners, you've probably been in that experience before, or you know one. Just as you're saying it, Phoebe, I mean, I can think of numerous examples, even with the musicians, you know, that I know, and the ones that really value what they're worth, and they charge a particular rate and they don't come down for it, and they're really upfront about it. They're good at what they do. They know that they're good at what they do. And it doesn't mean that they get any less gigs. In fact, they probably get more because they're owning their value, owning their worth, and they're getting paid more for it. So it just kind of puts them in a different level, and it sits all, you know, right at the heart of that self-belief kind of place. Oh. So to switch gears just a little bit, something that you talk about as well is how we can use setbacks like getting into debt as a springboard for up-leveling ourselves and our businesses. So, I mean, could you talk us through a little bit more about that, Phoebe?
Well, talking about getting into debt to up-level your business is, I don't think it's ever a bad thing. I think that a business sometimes needs to get into a little bit of debt to be able to buy new equipment, or to shoot forward on a project that if you had to had to fund it with just the income that you're making at the moment, you're sort of really never going to get there to be able to have enough money to do the next thing. So things like, and I'm not talking about everyday things. I'm talking about, say, putting in a new CRM system or getting some really good marketing and advice and things like that. Getting into debt for doing those sort of things that really up-level your business and change the game. You can make a plan around. You know how long it's going to take you to pay it back. You know that it's going to mean an incremental increase in income. That sort of debt in business is nothing to be afraid of. Other debt, like credit card debt that you've, you know, been living off and stuff like that, it's a little bit different. I've had times in my business where, particularly when I was first starting and I had a business partnership and it went wrong, and I think I spent about 3 or 4 months living off my credit cards, and it took me about 3 or 4 years to pay them back. That kind of debt, not that pleasant, very stressful. You've really got to get your head around the kind of debt that you want to get into and how, and put a beginning, middle and end to it, how long it's going to take you to pay it back.
I think that's
sage
advice.
Was that a bit too all over the place? Sorry.
No, that's great. That's great. And I think having that, putting the plan in place is what really counts in that, because, I mean, there are all different phases of business where we really have to take a leap of faith. And I think that kind of getting into debt, you know, it is for some businesses that really, they, like you say, they need that extra cash injection to up level. So long as they're, you know, being advised well about it and have a plan in place to manage it, then it's doable.
If you know your numbers in business as well, so if you know that at the moment without marketing you're making $5,000 a month, but if you take a step, you build a really good CRM system, you build a new website, that's all going to cost you $20,000, but the outcome is going to be an extra $5,000 a month in your business ongoing, then those sort of debt decisions really make sense, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I strongly believe, in fact.
Yeah, and this really comes back to proper cash flow forecasting and planning, doesn't it?
It really does. You have to, in personal and in business, you really have to know where your money goes. The best, I do a cash flow forecast off a previous year because we've got a lot of annual expenses and stuff like that. And it year on year, it just makes such a difference to know what's going on so that we can make decisions about, you know, do we get a loan for that? Are we going to be able to fund that? Can we pay that back? If we get any lending, I like to be able to pay it back quickly. We need to know what the rules are around things. You can, you know, it can make such a big difference to have a new car or something like that. So if you know that you're going to be able to afford it ongoing, but if you're living month to month with your fingers crossed and really just hoping that it's all going to turn out, you can't see into the future, and you can't see at, and that makes me think as well, Prue, one of the things that we do as business owners as well is we tend to look into our bank accounts and think, oh my God, that's all I've got. And you forget the ongoing nature of money, that it just keeps coming towards you. So doing that cash flow forecasting is a good mindset changer as well.
That's a really great point, in that money, it does flow. That's its very nature. It's not to bring it towards you and then have it stagnant in your business, or, you know, that whatever's in the bank account will only ever be there, because it does. It's designed to come and go by its very, very nature and be in that kind of flow as well. And it's interesting, you know, that cash flow forecasting, that's one thing, of course, that we teach in our High End Hustlers program. And I quite often say when I'm teaching it, and I know that there's, you know, there's fancy programs out there that will do it automatically these days, but I love doing cash flow forecasting on an Excel spreadsheet because I think it can allow you to really manipulate the numbers and really understand how money moves in your business. And I quite often, when I'm teaching that component, it doesn't take long. It only takes 10 to 15 minutes to teach and for people to understand it and then to be able to have a look into the future of their business. And yeah, I find myself just saying, like, if you take one thing away from this program, let it be cash flow forecasting, because it is the closest thing that you will get to having a crystal ball in your business. And Phoebe, you would know as well as me, and I'm sure many of our listeners as well, you know, the anxiety that comes, that there is a level of anxiety that comes with running a business. And I would say the vast, vast majority of that is around money and cash flow. You know, is Absolutely. How long is this going to be around for? Am I going to have enough? And as you say, when we've got a great plan in front of us, we can just see how the money's moving in our business. It doesn't have to be difficult, but we can make some smarter decisions about, do I get a loan? Do I get that piece of equipment? Or for a lot of people, am I able to hire? You know, can I get that extra set of hands on board that's going to actually make running this business a whole lot more enjoyable for me, because I can get the junior graphic designer, or I can, you know, I can get the bookkeeper, or, you know, any number of those kind of crucial employees that you're going to have on. It's doing that cash flow forecasting, which, like I said, doesn't need to be overly complicated, that gives you that crystal ball look into the future. And then whether it's good or bad, the way that the cash flow looks moving forward, you can actually do something about it. And that puts you right back in the driver's seat of your business.
Absolutely, it does. And you're right, particularly when employing people, you need to know what your cash flow is going to be ongoing. And you also need to know the difference that you can also project the difference that you think it's going to make to have someone else in there, because it can sometimes be a slow start while there's a training period, and then it can really, really accelerate to have that second person. But it's a big responsibility as well. So knowing where your numbers are makes you feel a lot better about that. And I have to say, Prue, the way that you teach that in HEH is divine. It's so simple. It's so good. It's so easy to understand. And I think everyone in our HEH group walked away from that just with a strong knowledge of their finances and the ability to talk about where they were going with a much clearer direction.
Oh, thanks, Phoebe. That's a bit chuffed to hear that, to be honest.
I had a lot of creative people in mind, and it's a part of their business that they don't overlook but feel intimidated by, I would say. And not everyone, but that can be a bit of a mood. And having a really good understanding of it, that it's not complicated, it's not hard, it's just part of the life, really makes a difference to people.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if I do have one skill in business, it's making the complex simple. And it might not have all the bells and whistles, but it's what you need to know to move forward on. So I'm thrilled to get that feedback live on air to me, in fact. So before blowing my own trumpet too much, Phoebe, what do we need to do to step out of financial fear and kind of leap ourselves into that place of trust?
I think a lot of people speak about finances with really big words and really long-term views. So people talk about having financial freedom and independence and really big words. But I think if you look at money as a tool and not a magic wand, it's just a tool. It's small. It's something that you can control. It's something that helps give you choice. And it's something that you manage. You earn it and you own it and you choose what you do with it. And I think just that thing, just make it something that's within your control instead of something that's big and fantastic and hard and impossible to get your head around.
I think that's absolutely wonderful advice, because that's what it is. It is a tool. We're in this society right now, which is absolutely glorifying money when it's a simple exchange system. I mean, that's kind of everything it is and all that it is at the same time. I was really having a think about this doing a podcast soon about wealth in business, and it's just so much more than the money. I mean, the money is an important part, but there's so many different aspects to our wealth and our abundance and that, you know, what we're actually building along the way, which isn't just financial. And when we give it is as though we give it so much of our power. And, you know, I work with so many creatives as well, just like you, Phoebe, and we just see this kind of, the level of self-worth goes out the window when so much power is handed over to money, when it is like a non-human tool. It's kind of almost the least important of all the things. I remember saying that to one of my friends, you know, recently. She's getting a bit upset about money. I'm like, it's just money, you know. You realize that, like, no, it seems like a big deal, but that's kind of all it is. It's just money.
And getting upset about it and attaching emotion to it gives it way more power than it deserves. You sort of don't, you think about something else that you need to nourish yourself, like water. You don't give water that much power. You don't walk around saying, oh, you know, that water hates me, or I'm no good with water, or I can't, you know, can't bear to drink that, or I've drunk too much water or not enough water. And it's just there. It's just there as a tool and not something that needs a whole lot of emotion around it. The good in your business is the business that you actually do and the outcomes that you get for your clients or yourself or your family. And that's your wealth. That's your abundance. That's your, you know, the change you make in the world and how you're impacting your community or your customers, or what, that's your abundance. And if you get that part right, and I see it so often, then the money just follows. The money just comes.
That's so, so true. It's, I know in my own business, but also all the businesses that we coach as well, it's like just like figure out what feels good, like what, like follow that, do what you're really good at, like lead with the difference that you're making in the world. And I mean, you know, that can be, it can be a small difference or a big difference, but make the change to people's lives or change the planet, whatever it might be. And the money just naturally flows. So I guess kind of one of our last questions here, Phoebe, what are the kind of, I guess the flip side, I should say, is what are the limitations that you see in entrepreneurs that are holding them back from achieving that kind of, you know, financial abundance?
One of them is definitely the focus on money over outcomes. I see that quite a lot. So a lot of people look at, you know, making sure they're getting paid right, making sure that they're billing right, all of those sort of things, but they're not thinking of the actual outcome for the client or for the business or for the end result of their work. I think that shrinks people a lot, particularly when they first start in business, because they're looking to get paid what they were getting paid when they were working, and it doesn't quite work that way because there's a lot of things that you have to put in. I think that the other limitation is not thinking that you're worth anything and undercharging and not backing yourself, not going in there and saying, okay, I'm producing this great result, and I think some people in business almost give away too much for free where they should be charging because they're too embarrassed to ask, or they don't feel good about asking for money. So I think that's a huge limitation that entrepreneurs put on themselves.
I believe that through and through. And it's something that I've watched you do, Phoebe, with, you know, mutual friends of ours or people through the programs, is that you really see the possibilities for them. And, you know, one particular person comes to mind who I won't name here on the show, but, you know, she really wanted to buy a house, and, you know, a bunch of other brokers, because her and her husband worked for themselves, had said, you know, you could maybe borrow this much, you could maybe borrow that much, and it was a pittance. And then along came you, Phoebe, and you're like, oh no, of course you can do it, you can have that and you can have more. And it was just, it was actually life-changing for them. You know, they bought their first home and they're absolutely thrilled with it, and, you know, their lives have actually changed as a result of it, and they're just on this completely different trajectory because instead of looking at those limitations, you were looking for the opportunity there. And when you kind of shifted that lens to be looking at the opportunity, just everything changed. Everything changed. They changed, their frequency changed, and then the results that they actually, you know, that came back to them changed as well. And, you know, buying their first home, it's absolutely huge. And I know that this is actually something that you're incredibly good at, Phoebe, is helping people buy their first home. So I just wanted to kind of, yeah, give you a shout out and some credit for that, because, I mean, when I just saw you work your magic there, it was absolutely incredible and a real talent to be able to do for self-employed people.
It really is. My hairdresser years ago said to me, we were talking about a mutual friend of ours, and he said to me, oh my God, this guy's, you know, he's gone from having this great cafe and all that sort of stuff to going and working for someone else. Doesn't he understand that when you're an entrepreneur, when you're self-employed, you can always find money, but when you're working for pay, you only get what you get at the end of every week, month or fortnight. And that completely changed my attitude to the way that I look at self-employed people. So then we start with what is it you want to achieve, and then we work out how we're going to manifest and put the practical and the impractical all together actually make that happen, which it can and does all the time.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. So, Phoebe, tell our people what you're up to, because there's a lot of things going on.
There are a lot of things going on. So I've got a mortgage broking business in Melbourne, which my daughter and I do. My daughter Elodie and I, and she's fantastic with first home buyers as well, but all home buyers. We look after a lot of self-employed people, and so we've got that business. I've just written The Happy Money Journey, and we're in the middle of the launch for that. So that can be bought on our website. Just look up My Happy Money Journey or Happy Money Journey. We've also got a series of courses that are coming out, which I'm very excited about, that are the same thing, tracking how you spend money, make money, and then moving into a deeper dive on how to invest and how to really set yourself up so that you're a bit bulletproof in the future.
Well, get all over it, listeners, because you can hear from speaking to Phoebe, she breaks it down, she makes it super simple. And when I was reading the Happy Money Journey book, you've done such a brilliant job on it in just in making the complex really simple. And I think kind of putting money in its place and showing money that we're the boss of it. And it was such an empowering read to go through. And when I say it was simple, it's like it's got all the information there, but just to be able to understand it and digest it and move through it was really wonderful. So if anyone out there just wants to smarten up about money and how to better use it and, you know, to make good decisions around it, then I couldn't more highly, recommend heading Phoebe's way to have a look at things. So Phoebe, just finally, I'd love if you could give everyone the website so that they could head over there and have a look and grab a copy of the book.
Absolutely. It's www.cloverfinancial.com.au.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, friends. Well, do head over there, have a look. I hope this has given you a little fire under your belly to be the boss of money, because that's what I think that we all should be. And Phoebe, thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute treat, and no doubt we'll have you back again soon.
Thank you so much, Prue. I'm so grateful, and what a lovely conversation.
Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you never want to miss an episode, be sure to subscribe over on Apple Podcasts. I'm also dropping some juicy business building tips on Instagram, so head over to @ownerscollective to join in the fun. And finally, folks, if you're hungry for a deep dive into the entrepreneurial story behind some of the best businesses around, be sure to listen to my other podcast, One Wild Ride, where we talk all things good business, positive impact, and epic adventures with the most inspiring entrepreneurs around.